We're going to continue stories with Terry Lovelace and, again, his book, his latest one, Devil's Den, The Reckoning. So get ready for more stories on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Terry Lovelace with us as we're talking about Devil's Den. Terry, let's finish up the story of the little girl who disappeared, then we'll get into some of these stories that you have that people have sent you.
Great. Yes, a young man by the name of Chadwick was on top of this precipice, and he was calling out. The little girl's name was Catherine Van Alst. And if you research 1946 Pittsburgh Press, you can find the original story. Her original story is easily found on the internet. It's also in David Pilates' book.
Yeah.
But he was calling out Catherine, and she walked out from this little lime overhang, not quite a cave, but she walked out and said, "Here I am." And he was just overwhelmed. He went over and picked her up and carried her back considerable distance. And, you know, everyone was just ecstatic and happy. And this little girl had no memory. She said, "Well, I woke up here and I thought I'd stay here till you come to get me." She had no memory where she'd been the prior 6.5 days.
Jeez.
And she had a few bug bites, but this is crazy. Her hair was clean. Her mother said that she hadn't lost an ounce of weight, and she was well hydrated. And where she was at, there was no potable water anywhere.
But she doesn't remember anything.
Doesn't remember a thing. I would love to have talked to her, but I couldn't find her. I tried, but I couldn't find her. And, you know, she'd been up in years by now. But you know what I did do is when I wrote Devil's Den, in the epilogue of my book, I put an email address, lovelace.landpope@gmail.com.
Oh, I bet you got flooded with stories, Terry.
You know what? I expected to maybe get 100. And I think last time I was on, I had 600 or 700.
Mm-hmm.
I've cracked 1,400 stories.
Wow. How did you select from 1,400?
Well, you know what I did was I used a method. And, I mean, you know, you can separate the wheat from the chaff. I mean, you talk to a lot of guests, and I'm sure that, you know, you can size up, and I don't judge anyone's story, but you can size up what's a good story and what's not.
Mm-hmm. You get that feeling.
I had a core group of about 400 of these out of the 1,400 that were just really blew me away. And, you know, there's this thread of commonality that runs through them. They all start off with, now, please don't think I'm crazy. I know this is going to sound nuts. They start off with this disclaimer, and then they tell me these amazing stories. And I chose 50 of them and contacted them. Oh, I returned everyone's email that emailed me. But I contacted these folks who had what I thought were 50 of the best of the best and established a line of communication if they wanted to.
Are they UFO stories or disappearances or a combination of those?
Oh, it's a mixed bag. You know, and I distilled that down to the best 30, and I'll give you a couple examples. I had a 76-year-old woman from Henderson, Nevada, email me, and she told me about she was living in Las Vegas in 1968, newly married. Her husband was a nephrologist, worked for the hospital there in Las Vegas, and they used to drive from Las Vegas to Reno, where she had family. And they would stop somewhere along the route, the halfway point, a little town she called Tunapa. And she said there was a restaurant there called the Stagecoach. And they made this trip once a month. You know, like all doctors, he worked 60, 70 hours a week. So this was like once a month they'd have a 3 or 4 day weekend and they'd spend time together. So they're making the trip, and they usually make it in the afternoon during daylight. But he got stuck at the hospital, so they didn't get to leave until 6 o'clock p.m. So they were driving in the dark. They stopped at Tunapa. They had a nice meal. They got back in the car, and they headed toward Reno. And 10 miles outside of Tunapa, they saw on the right this store. It was a Christmas store. And she said, It was the first time I ever saw a store devoted solely to the holiday. And the placement of the store just didn't make any sense. You know, why would you stick a store out in the middle of the desert, you know? And she says, "Pull over. I think they're open." and this is 10 o'clock at night. And he pulls off to the side of the road, and, you know, they just had a nice long dinner. They didn't drink any alcohol, nothing wrong with their vision. He pulls off to the shoulder of the road right in front of the place, and she said that it was a brick structure with, and again, insanely lit with these Christmas lights wrapped all around it and the words Christmas in neon on top. And they could see movement behind these windows. And they were there for some period of time, and they just kind of became mesmerized by this thing staring at it. And she said, we could see motion inside the windows. And she said, well, are we going to pull in? And he says, there's no driveway. And they looked, and there were no cars. And then they looked and figured out there was no parking lot. Like sitting in the middle of the sand. And they left. They pulled out, got back on the highway, and went to Reno. And she told me that she slept the whole way from Tunica to Reno. And she said that was very unusual. That was time for them to catch up and have conversation. But she was out like a light. And they were kind of out of sorts for 24 hours, she said.
Most of these cases happened years ago. Has something changed where they're just not being abducted like they used to be?
Boy, I don't know. But, you know, and this woman, I got to tell you, I spoke with her by phone twice, and she was sharp as a tack. I mean, she had no cognitive deficits whatsoever. And why would a 76-year-old woman make up a fairy tale?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I'll tell you, she was very, very credible. And she told me that they compared notes. They didn't like to talk about it. And that's very common, too. They didn't like to talk about it. It made them uncomfortable to talk about it. He remembered the structure being made out of barn wood. She remembered it being made out of wood. So on her way home, they made a point, well, we're gonna drive past this and get a better look at it. And, of course, it's not there. And the following weekend, they went back up. They just said, well, let's go up and find this thing, you know. Let's go up and they drove up, and it wasn't there. It didn't exist.
Tell about the story of the nurse anesthetist.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. 69-year-old nurse anesthetist from Oklahoma. When she was 9, she had a sister named Molly. I'll call her Molly. And I call her Julia. And every summer, they would spend 2 weeks at their maternal grandmother's farm, the family farm. And this farm had a big old farmhouse and a nicely manicured front lawn with a big old oak tree, long driveway going up to it. And there was a berm, a 10-foot-high mound of dirt that was actually a roadway where the grandpa would drive his tractor to transit across one side of the field to the other side. And in back of that berm, there was a pond and farm equipment. And the girls knew the rules because they were there every year, and the rules were they could not go over that berm because there was a pond, you know, 8 to 10 feet deep in back of that berm, and they were worried the girls would go back there and drown, you know. So they knew the rules. This was the first year that they were allowed to play outside in the front yard unsupervised because they were – Julia especially was very, you know, very, very good, took care of her little sister, obeyed the rules. So they're out there playing, and Julia says they heard calliope music. Now, she had explained to me that's what these traveling circuses, back in the day, you know, for entertainment, these circuses went from city to city on like a circuit,
mm-hmm.
By train, and they travel, and they played this calliope music, which was like a steam-driven pipe organ.
Right.
And
I remember that music.
I do too. Yeah, and the little girl Molly, who's 7, cocks her head to the side and says, "Yeah, yeah, it's a circus." And they're like excited. Oh boy, it's a circus! And Molly's like, "Can we go up and see? You know, because they thought they could see it. They could hear it coming from the other side of the berm." And Julia's like, "No, Grandpa said we can't go across the berm. You know that's the rules. We'll have to go ask Grandpa." And Molly would have made a good lawyer. Molly says, "Yeah, but Grandpa didn't say we couldn't go on top of it and just look. So Julia says, yeah, you're right. So,
oh, boy.
Two little girls climb up on top of this mound of dirt, 10-foot-high berm, stand on the road, and Julia told me that they saw the biggest merry-go-round, or, well, there's another word for it I can't think of.
Carousel?
Carousel, thank you, carousel. Biggest one she'd ever seen in her life, three times the size of one you see at your run-of-the-mill circus. And she said, you know, just like the Christmas store, thousands of twinkling lights all around it. And she said that this thing was 3 or 4 feet off the ground. And I'm like, well, how could you tell it's off the ground? And she said, well, it was about noon, and I could see a distinct shadow, perfectly round shadow underneath the thing. And I said, well, describe it to me more. And she says, yeah, we both saw the horses looked like they were alive. They weren't on poles. And this thing was spinning so fast, no one could have got on or got off of it and not been hurt. And they're, you know, just like the older couple, they're mesmerized by this thing. And they laid down on the grass and held hands and are watching this thing. And the next thing you know, Grandma comes out to call the girls in for lunch and they're gone.
And it's not a carousel. It was a UFO, wasn't it?
Darn right it was.
Yep. Like Ezekiel's wheel.
Oh, yes.
That kind of thing.
And you know, what's odd is, and this matches what happened to my friend Toby and I, there was a distinct change in their personalities. They were changed little girls when they got back.
Bad or good?
Well, both. It was crazy. Julia said, well, first of all, what happened was they thought that they couldn't find them anywhere. This is 4 hours later. They think they're in the water. So they got two guys in a John boat out there with poles stirring the water, trying to see if little bodies will pop up. And the boatman swears that he had eyesight, within eyesight, this patch of grass on the side of the berm. And they weren't there, and he looked up the next instant, and they were there. So everybody rejoices, and they're sound asleep. They have to wake them up. And where have you been? Well, we're watching the carnival ride. And but what happened, the change when they went there, they were just two very close sisters, playful little girls. Julia was a solid C student at school who struggled with math. Now, she went back to school. This was in June. She went back to school that August. And all of a sudden, the new subject was fractions. And it was easy. And she had a knack for math. And she'd never had that before. And her schoolwork was a breeze.
They somehow implanted knowledge in her or something.
She got a gift. Yeah. She got a gift. And you know, Molly, poor Molly, suffered and became sullen and withdrawn, argumentative. And in her late teens, she was diagnosed with a personality disorder. Eventually, it was diagnosed as bipolar disorder. She had a string of failed marriages and just did not have a happy life. Where Julia, on the other hand, everything she touched turned to gold. You know, she had a wonderful life. She told me her biggest regret was she didn't go to medical school, you know. But she had a great career, a nurse anesthetist, a very good job.
Now, when you waited until you retired to be, you know, you were an assistant attorney general. I mean, you've got some credentials here. And again, as you were saying, why would a 69-year-old woman be making things up, or 76-year-old? Why would you make this up?
No reason, I'll tell you. I wrote this book as a catharsis. I wrote it really to get it out of my system and put it on paper. And I knew there'd be some feedback. And I lost some friends in the legal community. And you know what? That's okay.
Why, they think you were off your rocker or what?
They said, Oh, yeah. I got a couple phone calls saying, have you lost your mind? What is wrong with you? But, you know, I'll tell you, that's more than compensated by the friends I've made in the UFO community. Because there is a UFO community in this culture.
Well, and you'll get some. We're going to take calls with you, Terry, next half hour.
Oh,
either questions or stories. But tell us about the South African story.
Oh, this man sent me an email, and It's kind of oddly worded because it's a mix of English and Afrikaans. And he had a repair shop right outside of Johannesburg. And it was his father's shop. They did automobile work. He said, we fixed anything mechanical we could fix. And one day he got a call from this man, Duncan, who was an older gentleman who had a farm. He broke a belt on his tractor. And he calls his friend up and says, can you bring me a belt? He says, you know, I had worked on his machine before, so I knew what it was. I knew what he needed. And he got in his Land Rover and drove out to the middle of this, you know, nowhere in this field and found his friend. And his friend was beside himself. He was just shaking and upset. And he says, Duncan, what's wrong? What is wrong with you? And he says, come on, I got to show you something. And they were on the edge of a field. And there was a line of trees, a line of brush that divided Duncan's property from his neighbor's property. And for some reason, I guess they both had sidearms. I don't know if people were commonly armed in that area of the world, but they were. They both had sidearms. And Duncan, the older guy, pulls out his sidearm and says, Kai, I'll show you something. So they walk through this brush, and they look over at their neighbor's field. There's no house, just field, grass, wheat, whatever, you know. And there are four objects that are bullet-shaped, and they're about 8 or 10 foot tall, and they're, you know, like cones made out of highly polished metal, and they're all rotating. They're all spinning like crazy. And they're, you know, 4 or 5 feet off the ground, just hovering there. And Duncan says, they're spaceships, you know, and he's got his gun out. He's scared to death. And the guy, I forget his name, the guy that wrote me the email says, you know, no. He says, these are from the United States, or they're from the Soviet Union, or maybe China, but there is no such thing as spaceships. So he says, I'm going to go talk to them. I'm going to see who they are. So he walks out, and he walks up to the closest one. And Duncan, the old man, has his pistol out and says, well, I'll cover you. And he said, I told him, put that pistol away. You're going to shoot me in the, he's very humorous. His story is very humorous. But very serious too. He gets to this machine and it's spinning, and he said he could feel electromagnetism. Being a mechanic, I guess he'd be attuned to that. And as he walked up, he's went through 3 or 4 feet of the thing. It descended until it was just like a foot off the ground, descended a bit, and it stopped rotating. And they're opened up like a cathedral shaped opening. Opened up like he said, it opened like a camera lens. It just opened up, and there was a man. He said a man there, normal, maybe, you know, 5'6", 5'8", in a silver suit,
looking human looking.
Yes, he said that he appeared to be. His words were of the Mongoloid race, meaning I guess Asian. So, but he said he looked human. And but kind of dark skinned, but you know, did not look alien at all.
I'll have you finish that story, Terry, when we come back, and then we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Catherine Austin Fitz joins us to talk about our financial future. And then later on in the program, Tim Schwartz joins us to talk about his big book of incredible alien encounters. So we continue with the alien agenda this week on Coast to Coast. And welcome back. Terry Lovelace with us. In a second, we'll tell you where you can get his books. Terry, let's finish up on the South African story, and then we'll move to calls.
Yeah, sounds great. I love to take calls. This man appeared, as I said, he described him as having Mongoloid features and like a silver suit. There was a light behind behind the guy, so he saw mostly in silhouette. And he said he didn't use the word telepathically. He said thought transference. He said he communicated by thought transference, and he heard the guy in his head say, "We're sorry for the trespass. We'll be off and on our way in just a moment." And he says, "Well, I'm pretty good with mechanical stuff. Do you need me to give you a hand?" And the guy said, "Well, no, but would you like to come in and see our machine?" And he said, "Yeah, I would love to." And then the man in the spaceship says, "You know, you have a friend over there that's not doing well and is very scared. You should go take care of your friend." And he says, "Yeah, maybe that's a good idea." So he walked back. He said, as he turned his back, the door went back, the opening closed, and the thing started to spin again. And all four of these things were spinning. You know, his was the only one to stop, the one that he was stopped at. The others continued to spin. And they got to the tree line and sat there and watched these things until they took off. And I don't know how much time had passed, but they sat there for some while, and then they took off. And he said that they all rose in formation and just shot off over the horizon. And he said that afterward, there were four spots at his in Duncan's neighbor's yard or field where they were just, the ground was bare. Nothing would grow there.
All right, let's go to the phones. Joe in Long Island, New York, to get us started. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, Terry. It seems like a common denominator is a lot of these people, including maybe your case, they're just trying to be adventurous. They're not as familiar with the local territory. And so I have two questions. One would be how they reveal their intentions, how soon, and within what's happening. And then did you or anybody else get a clear look at the eyeball?
I never saw an eyeball. The things that I saw, both the grays, the little grays, I saw three creatures when I was aboard this craft. I saw the little grays that I think I already said I think are more robotic than they are. They're not sentient.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the guy with the chalkish pink complexion. They both had dark, like solid ink eyes, and this, you know, pink guy had like wraparound Ray-Bans. They put me on a table, and they were doing something to my lower back, and this was an insectoid-like thing that was like 7 foot tall that had the praying mantis look to it, and it had multifaceted eyes, large multifaceted eyes on either side of a triangular-shaped head. I called him, in my mind, I keep calling him Dr. Bug, because I picture this thing in a white lab coat, and I'm sure it wasn't in a white lab coat, but that's the way I picture the thing. But I never saw, like I said, the insectoid thing. The eyes were insect-like, multi-lensed, and then in the grays and in the other guy, too, they were just black, shiny, like high gloss black paint, but no pupil, no iris, no sclera, and I don't know, I've wondered, is that actually their eye, or is that something they wear over their eyes?
Like you said, sunglasses or something like that. Maybe the sun bothers them.
Yeah.
Could be. All right, thanks, Joe. Josh in Newton, Kansas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Josh.
Hi, George. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, I just wanted to share my experience, and first-time caller, by the way. But I had a very similar experience to yours, except for mine didn't. I don't remember a lot of it. I'm 32 now. I was about 17 then, but me and my buddy decided to go camping, and just on a whim, and we went to a place that I grew up going to, and so long story short, we get out there, and he has to go back to work. He gets called in to work, and so I'm out there by myself. And it starts to get dark and everything, and, you know, I'm out there with, I had a little puppy at the time, but, so anyway, it gets dark, my campfire kind of gets low, and I start, there's a bluff on the other side of this river that's about, you know, 20, 30 foot high, and, it, you know, there's a hill that slopes up above that, and on the other side of it, I've been over there before, but there was nothing, you know, it's just all flat land. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that night, I started seeing really bright flashes of light. And, I mean, it was such a clear sky that night. Like, there was no, it was no heat lightning or, you know, anything like that. And, the strangest thing, like, I got this really eerie feeling, and the oddest thing was I decided to go to sleep. Like, I was scared to death that something was happening, but I didn't know what. And then I got in my tent and went to sleep. And the next thing I know, it's like 4 hours later, yeah, and my friend had returned and woke me up, and I told him about what happened, you know, and I just felt really off. And any time that I've visited that place since, I just felt uneasy. And
well, you clearly had some kind of experience there, Terry. And how do they make the memory wash, Terry? How do they do that?
Boy, I don't know. You know, I think they have a lot more influence over our mood, our memory, you know, than we give them credit for. You know, and Josh, I'm curious, was there a change in the nature of your relationship with your buddy? Were you still the same, or did something change?
So we're no longer friends, really.
Did this episode do that?
I don't know. I mean, there were many factors at play as to why we're not friends anymore. But
did
I
you
feel
guys
like
talk
something
about
changed
it?
After that day. No, we don't talk about it.
Uh-huh.
That's, I'm a little similar, Terry, to your situation. You really didn't talk too much about it afterwards, did you?
No, sure didn't. Well, you know what? Read Ray Fowler's book about the Allagash event. You know, the Allagash Four. You got twin brothers and Rack, and I forget the other guy's, Fultz was the other guy's name. The four of them were tight. I mean, they were like best of friends. And after they had their experience up in Allagash, Maine, on the lake, they all drifted apart.
Where do people get your books, by the way?
Amazon. I'm on Amazon.com. I also have a website, TerryLovelace.com. And a Facebook page, Incident at Devil's Den. But my books are only on Amazon. I have a Kindle version and the paperback with the photographs and drawings in the back. And then I also, on Devil's Den, I made it what I think is a very good audio book. I did it in my own voice. I don't have a great, I'm not a voice artist, but, you know, I wanted it to be in my own words.
That's a lot of work, too, audio books.
It is a lot of work, and it's an 8 hour. It's an 8 hour audio. So, that's Amazon and Incident at Devil's Den, and then the new one, Devil's Den: The Reckoning.
Couple minutes left here, Terry, and what do you recommend to people who have gone through similar things that you did, and they don't know who to turn to?
I recommend a couple of things. There's an organization named Opus. I was on their board for a while. I'm still on their board as an advisory member. OPUS, it's the, I can't remember what it stands for, Organization of Paranormal Understanding and Study. I would refer you to Opus. And, you know, I would also refer you to go to a MUFON meeting and get to know some people if you're struggling. And, Or talk to a mental health mental health guy. You know, you'd be surprised. I think there are more. My best friend.
Did you ever do therapy?
I have not. Not officially, but like I say, my best friend's a psychiatrist, and we talk about it a lot. So maybe I am doing therapy and not, but not officially. But it's a life-changing event. It sure is.
Yeah, it really is. Are you glad this happened to you or not?
I wouldn't take it back.
You would not?
I would not. I think it's the way it's supposed to be.
600,000 Americans disappear every year. Isn't that weird?
That's frightening.
I mean, some of them wander off, they run away, but I mean, 600,000 people, poof, they're gone. Terry, thanks for being on the program. Really appreciate it.
Oh, really appreciate the invite. Thank you so much.
You keep in touch with us. His websites are all linked up. He's got a Facebook account. And his website is terrylovelace.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Well, every once in a while, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we want to end this thing on an upbeat note because of everything people are going through. So we're going to still continue to do that for you. And again, stay with us all week. We've got some great programs for you. But here's something for you that I think those of you who haven't heard this will get a kick out of.
Hey, Mark, excuse me. I'm on my way to 3768. Kind of got hung up. It's raining out here. I'm on my way into Dallas. Jerry's probably going to be calling you to find out where I'm at, if he can't get a hold of me, I'm sure. So thought, whoa, man, I just had a wreck right in front of me. This guy ran a red light and hit four old ladies in an Impala. Just kind of clipped them, turned them around right in front of me, man. That was close. Oh, now this guy's getting out of his car. He's got a white shirt on with a tie and a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He's throwing his hands up in the air like it was their fault. Oh, hold on. He's going over to their window. She's rolling down the window. Oh, man, I think she sprayed him with pepper spray, man. He's holding his face, and he's on his knee. She's getting out. She's beating him with an umbrella. The other women are getting out, too. There's one woman with a little black person. She's tomahawking him, man. She looks like a Sunbelt 20 horsepower jackhammer. Blah, blah, blah. We got another woman that's she's hitting him like he's got a cattle prod, man. She's got an umbrella and she's sticking it in his side. Oh, there's another one that it's a little woman that looks like Mother Goose. She's beating him. She's got this U-bid bag. She's beating him. She's got this U-bid bag. It's huge. It's about the size of her. She's about 4 foot nothing. She hit him over the head. Everything went all over the place. Her Bible fell. She just hit him in the head with a Bible. She picked this Bible up and she lifted it way over her head. It was a hardback NVI version. Oh, they're still beating the out of this guy. She picked this Bible up and raised it up above her head and just beamed the guy. This guy's not getting up. They're still hitting him. The one with the little black person still. Oh, pieces of. Okay, he's up on the car. Oh. The little woman just beating him again with that big bag. He's running to his car. He's out of here. The little bitty Mother Goose woman. Oh, she's stuck into him and she's driving off. I wish you would have been here, man. Oh, this is too good.
Cracks me up every time. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.